Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
My name is Dave Hanratty and there will be no encore. Welcome to episode 361 of the No Encore Music Podcast. Today's guest co-host is none other than the wonderful singer-songwriter that is Alva Reddy. Alva has been on the show a couple of times before, so we're delighted to welcome her back just as she jets back in from a tour of the United States of America, no less. Yeah, she's a real Joe Biden this week, but I think more charismatic, you know, if you ask me. And certainly with her top five selection this time out, top five movie needle drops, that's going to be on this show very, very shortly. And you may well ask, did you not do that before, Dave? It sounds familiar. It does sound familiar. We've done end credits music. We've done opening credits music. We've done songs written specifically for use in a film. But I don't think we've done just plain old needle drops. Now, what is a plain old needle drop, you ask? Well, it's essentially when they play a song in a movie, you know, pretty straightforward. You know, it's usually used to evoke some kind of emotion or set some kind of atmosphere, and it can be anything from Sabotage by the Beastie Boys playing in a Star Trek movie, or it could be anything from, what else we got here? Why is my mind gone blank? I knew this would happen. I fucking knew this would happen. I knew I'd sit down and I would just be like, whoa, hang on, why can't I think of a single needle drop? Because I watch a disgraceful amount of films. If I can just consult my own letterbox here for just a second, Adam might need to jump in and intervene with the... Yeah, the beloved technical difficulties music.
We are experiencing technical difficulties. Please stand by.
Okay, yeah, there's a terrible film called The One starring Jet Li, and it's extremely new metal to the point that there's like at least four instances of like tracks from the new metal era playing throughout it. Like you get like Bodies by Drowning Pool showing up during a fight scene. That's a needle drop, you know what I mean? Django Unchained, that cool James Brown Tupac mashup that plays at the end when Django's in the house, that's a needle drop. So you get the idea. It's when a song plays in a movie. I mean, like, I probably didn't even need to go that forensic, did I? I rarely do, is the thing. So here's the thing. I thought it would be a good idea to do this because it's kind of dealer's choice, you know? Like, Alva's coming in as a guest, much like Mark Conroy was a guest last week. So preferably, where possible, I would rather take on board a suggested top five from the person coming in. And in the case of Mark's last week, of course, just want to say a huge thank you to Mark, of course, for coming in, and also to people who got in touch about the episode. It was a strange one. Obviously, very, very heavy subject matter. There's just no way around that one. And I'm not going to lie to you. I was actually extremely nervous about doing it, particularly afterwards. And I feel really bad about that because, for starters, the last thing I want to do is demean anyone's experience of the episode, because I know some people did get in touch and said some very, very personal things. And I'm very, very grateful to those people for doing so. I'm also very, very grateful to Mark for bringing the subject to the table in the first place. And the truth is, you know, it's I sometimes get in my head about the show. I mean, it could be any top five. It could be any episode. Sometimes, you know, you want to listen back to it and you're very, very happy with what you've created and you think, yeah, this rules. Other times you are, it's the last thing you want to ever acknowledge. So it's tricky. And with this one, yeah, I kind of freaked out about it afterwards, you know. I kind of thought, was this too damn beat for a season premiere? Probably. But, you know, fuck it. You know, why not? Like, just go there. Like, there's no formula to this. You know, we're trying to figure our way out, as we have been for 7 years, and certainly in this kind of new regime of the show. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I can understand, you know, if it was a tough episode to get through and a challenging one, and I'm hopeful that people took something from it and didn't just turn it off halfway through, especially because the selections were excellent, by the way. And I say that a bit, Marks. I think mine were pretty good, too. But, you know, subjective, isn't it? And so, yeah, I mean, it's just one of those ones. Like I say, some people did get in touch personally, and thanks. Really, like, it's always nice to open that door and have people kind of say, yeah, man, I get it. Because you're worried, you know, you're worried that, like, you just shared too much or this was just too whatever. And it's like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm protesting too much. I know I am. And, you know, yeah, I've hit that really awkward wall now of not knowing quite what to say, apart from I'm glad that we did the episode. I really hope you liked it. If you didn't, I totally get it. And I was looking forward to doing this other top five with Alva Reddy because I was like, that'll be a good palate cleanser, you know? It'll just be fun and upbeat and, you know, really kind of 10 feet tall, kind of skyscraping needle drops. That's what we're going to have, right? Like, you know, they're in there. They're definitely in there, but I must confess, it's not all sunshine and roses. Is that even a phrase? I don't know. But once again, I do think that we have a good subject matter here. And a pretty impossible one in a way. You just can't pick five, but we tried. We did our very, very best. And I hope you enjoy that. But also, before we get going, I hope you enjoy this chat with Alva because she is about to go on tour in Europe. And she has just come back from the United States of America. So we had a chat about that. We had a chat about her new album, Endless Affair, which is out now. And we had a chat about her appearing on The Late Late Show, you know, that national institution hosted by the great Ryan Tuberty, who is retiring and not joining this show, by the way. You know, I know there's been some rumors that he might be joining up as a permanent co-host, but I'm going to quash those right now. And we'll get to this chat, shall we, with Alva Reddy. Won't you? Alva Reddy, everybody. Let's have a chat with her, and then let's get into the top five movie needle drops. This is No Encore. Stay tuned. Right, we can maybe include this, we can maybe not, we'll see what happens. But the point is, right now, I'm here in the No Encore studio with the returning guest after quite some time, the wonderful, the great, the glorious Alva Reddy.
The glorious, thank you very much, yeah.
Well, you're just back from America, and I assume glory is a big kind of theme over there, right? Pride and glory?
Oh my God, yeah, they love a bit of pride and glory. Not the gay pride kind.
No. Depends where you go, I'm sure some cities
do. Dan, driving through Indiana? Certainly not. Up in New York, yes.
Okay, so you were there for a month? Do I have that right?
I was actually there for 2 months.
Okay, that's more than I thought it was. It felt like a month to me, checking in on your Instagram stories every now and then.
Yeah, no, I went over there for a gig at the beginning of February and then just decided to hang around till the tour started.
So you, of course, we are speaking to Alva in the wake of the release of her sophomore album. It's out now, Endless Affair. I assume everyone listening has already got their copy. And if you haven't, shame on you.
Please buy it and then come to see me in Whelans, please.
You do have tour dates coming up, including two nights in Whelans. What dates are they again?
5th and 6th.
Of May, yes. May. Excellent. And yeah, so I mean, like, difficult second album thing. You know, I know you've been doing a lot of promo for the album. I don't want to ask you the same questions everyone's been asking you, but I do recall you saying a while ago that you'd put this together some time ago. So not quite difficult second album, or just sitting on it? Is that annoying?
Like first album I'd been sitting on for so long, and then second album I pretty much had all the songs written before the first album was out. So I've been sitting on it for ages.
You're just too good at this.
Well, throw enough shit at the wall, something's going to stick.
So 2 months in the States. Did this include, because of course you were supposed to go to Set by Set West, right?
Yeah, 2020.
Right as the pandemic hit. Yeah. Like pretty much
the week before.
Fucking hell. Yeah. So you got to go this time, right?
I did, yeah. So we had shows around that. So we did New York, Boston, Toronto, then a week at South by Southwest where we did like three shows, I think, and then did LA and San Francisco.
Toronto is my second city because I've been there twice.
Ooh, yeah, home away from home.
I do love it. Yeah, it's great.
It's beautiful, really nice crowd, sick venue, Horseshoe Tavern. They could not have taken better care of us. Really,
oh, really?
Really nice. It was snowing. It was mad because it was snowing in Toronto. We drove the whole thing and it was snowing in Toronto, like really deep, thick snow. And then we drove and I fell asleep in the car and woke up at some point just as we were hitting Indiana and it was like sunny, like within the same day. It was weird.
Nice. I'm curious as to like what the crowd's like, because I've got this fanciful idea of the North American tour. Like, not every Irish artist gets to do it. And I'm just curious, like, what the crowds are like. And also, you know, one doesn't want to overgeneralize American people, but surely there were some colorful characters along the way. How was your overall 2 month experience of this entire jaunt? Like,
really good. Yeah. I mean, been out for a while and certainly have played tough gigs in it, you know. All the gigs were well attended by mostly very lovely people. One absolute maniac in one of the cities who was very odd. But that was the only bad thing I can say about the whole thing because they were just totally nuts.
Like,
but,
aggressively nuts? Or like nuts?
Just like stalkery nuts, I guess. Sure, yeah, yeah. But won't focus on that too much, but there's always one. But yeah, like really nice crowds, really into the records. Some of the people were people who just like, they go to see shows at that venue every week and they go and they're music fans and like collect vinyl of whoever plays there and stuff, which is, I just think, is such a nice, still, I was lucky enough to be playing in venues where it seemed like there was like kind of a community aspect to a lot of them. So I had a really good experience and, you know, I've definitely played to smaller gigs, like crowds in Ireland and stuff. But yeah, everything was like well attended and really nice reception. I couldn't have, I mean, everything can always go better, but like could have gone a lot worse.
Yeah. And I mean, like, so you're there for St. Patrick's Day, of course.
Yes, yeah, so I was at South by Southwest.
On that day. Because like that, of course, is a day when, you know, American people are more Irish than Irish people. So how was the vibe?
I was hungover that day and I really was finding it quite intense. Yeah, I was at a thing with a free bar. It was like so intense. People were drinking Irish coffees, which was just like a milkshake, with a spiked milkshake, basically. And yeah, it was really intense. And there was a lot of people like dyed green mouths and stuff like that because they'd obviously been drinking like green milkshakes.
Jesus.
Very intense. It just very, a lot of people completely shit-faced at like 3 p.m.
Fuck's sake. Well, I mean, like, is
but
that...
that's the same here. I wouldn't go into Temple Bar on St. Patrick's Day anyway. I can't tell you a single thing I've done for St. Patrick's Day for the last 10 years. I have no idea. I don't think I ever celebrated.
Oh, I'm glad. I wouldn't want this to be a case of like, Dave, it's my favourite day of the year.
Yeah, imagine. It's my Christmas.
Yeah, I fucking like basically all but barricaded the doors of my house. I'm just like, no.
Why? No, I'm not going in. That, it's not for me.
No, absolutely not. No. So you're unpatriotic. Is that what we're getting at here?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But you did do the most patriotic Irish thing of all time. You did appear on The Late Late Show.
I did. And I wore green.
Yes, and perhaps not a coincidence, not long after you played the show, Ryan Tuberty has said, I'm leaving this program forever.
No, I was his bucket list artist to get on, of course. Yeah, yeah. No, he'd actually just had enough. He was like, I'm done if this guitar music continues.
Wow.
Yeah, it was cool. And he got Ryan Tuberty to say shit on air. So
that's right.
Because
the name of the song, of course, is Shit Show.
Yeah.
Was there any kind of, you know, trepidation on that one, or did he feel like a rock star getting to?
I was surprised that they were happy to do that, but they were really like, no, it's a great song, we want to do this, and there was no problem with it and no negative feedback. It's a pretty inoffensive fucking word, really.
Yeah, it's after the watershed as well. Like,
exactly,
on.
Yeah, they were like, it's after the, like, it's completely fine. And I was like, okay, well, whatever you guys think. And it went down fine. It's just a word.
It's a weird show, The Late Late. I mean, I think, you know, you're kind of at the mercy of the booker that week, where it's, because of course, you know, I've talked about this before, but like, they have to have everything on. So it's like a sports star, a film star, a music person, a fucking comedian, and a tragedy. You know, like, we have to have a tragic story. So you're just like, where am I going to fit in? Like, when are they going to, like, I mean, like, you're there, you're in the green room. I'm curious, like what the vibe is like on Late Late Show night, especially from someone who's like, you know, I'm performing, I'm doing my song, and like, I have to, you know, I want to, people are going to be watching, you know, like, you know, my friends, my family.
Mm.
It's a big deal.
Yeah, it's a cool thing to do because, I mean, you grow up with it around you and, like, everyone's aunts and mothers are very proud of you, it seemed. A lot of people's aunties texted me. But yeah, it was really nice. And everyone was really, I don't want to sound like a suck up or whatever, but like everyone there is really nice. Like everyone clearly like really likes their job there and is very accommodating. Sorry that I don't have any scandal.
Like, oh, no,
everyone,
no.
Everyone is very, very, like, sweet to me. Like, to a point where I was like, wow, they really make you feel really at home.
See, the truth is, actually,
because I'm really nervous going to those kind of things that I feel like I don't belong. I get really bad imposter syndrome. So
okay,
in those scenarios when people are, like, super nice and make you feel very welcome and, like, they're lucky to have you there, which isn't the case, I think it's really nice.
Well, I wouldn't expect scandal from Late Late, unfortunately. I think it's a tightly run ship. Too tightly run, I would say. I want scandal. But I mean, But the imposter syndrome thing is interesting. I mean, are you saying that like if you went to like to rehearse or sound check at a gig and things were crap that you'd feel more comfortable? Is that like, or is just, is that just a classic, you know, imposter syndrome thing that haunts every creative person? Or
I think it haunts most people. And it probably doesn't haunt some people, and they're probably very successful as a result, or just awful and unbearable to be around. I don't know. I definitely do notice that I really rally when I'm at a gig where people aren't listening, because I feel like...
Like the crowd or...
Yeah, like I cut my teeth doing like open mic nights, you know. Dublin was like so different, you know, 10 years ago or whatever, when I was first doing gigs and stuff. You started off doing open mic nights where like no one gave a shit.
Mm.
And you had to, like, we weren't putting out music beforehand. You literally started out doing those things. You have to be heard. So I think sometimes I kind of rally loads at gigs where I feel like I have to try harder. And I get a bit nervous when I feel like people are expecting a thing.
Sure.
This is so stupid. It's probably giving way too much of an insight into my psychology. But if people are expecting it to be really good and are really quiet and like really paying attention, I'm like, oh my God, I have to live up to this. But if people expect nothing and I get to impress them, I kind of almost feel less nervous.
Yeah, I'm curious about that in general, though, because I mean, like, I think everyone who has any kind of a following, especially now in the wonderful social media age that we live in, I mean, like, especially with the new album, I mean, like, surely some people have gotten in touch with you privately and been like, this means a lot to me. When that happens, I mean, do you go into like, I don't know what to say mode, or how do you find that those interactions when they do happen, whether it's at a
gig?
That's
the bit I get, like, because that's, I'm not, I'm more into the songwriting and recording and releasing aspect of it. Not to say that I don't like gigs, but it's not what I do it for. It's part of the job that I'm like, ooh, this is the tricky bit for me. You
okay.
know? I don't have like an inbuilt mask that I can put on and get on stage and be a different person, and I'm not wearing like this impenetrable armor on stage. I'm very much like me. If someone says something mean, it'll hurt my feelings. But which people do. But when people send me messages, I'm like, you put a song out, it's less and less yours. People project their own ideas onto it. That's so fucking sick. Like, is it so cool that someone will listen to your music? And I always think, like, because I don't do this, when I'm listening to someone else's music and I'm like, this is such a beautiful song, I think about myself and my own experiences. And I know that that's what other people are doing. So it's so cool to think that anyone's listening to songs I wrote in my stupid little room, in my stupid little head with my little guitar, and that some people are going like, yeah, fuck, that reminds me, or like, that makes me feel comforted. That's what it's about.
I think that, yeah, I mean, like, that's a healthier attitude than being like, no, you got it wrong. Actually, it's about it's about me, okay?
Yeah, no, this is about the stock exchange, actually, yeah.
You don't get to project your sad little problems onto my music.
But, and also, like, by the time songs are released, like, that album, I finished writing that at the end of 2020. Like, it's like a snapshot of who I was.
Three years ago.
Yeah. Like, as in, and you go back and listen to it and you're like, wow, I'm such a different person now. You know, especially at this age, in your like late 20s and stuff like that, you're like a different person every few years. So I feel like I am a different person to the person who wrote those songs. Some of the songs are kind of hilariously petulant and some of them are hilariously self-conscious. In a way that I don't feel like I am anymore. So.
I was about to ask, would you describe yourself as a hilariously petulant person?
No, but like I definitely have, we all have aspects.
Oh, of course.
Also,
yeah.
Like songs are so like written in the moment. Like that song, A Mess, off it, if you know it. That song's meant to be kind of tongue-in-cheek petulant, but some people will read it. You can't control how people will read anything, so there's no point trying to.
Yeah.
But you put stuff out and people are really like, oh my God, that song is so sad. And I'm like, that song is a joke.
It's a comedy, yeah.
Like that is like a complete, me, I am taking the piss out of all of that stuff of like, oh, well, I can't do anything right then, you know, like, but I've just happened to put it to lyrics. But, you know, when you read lyrics, it's whatever your life experience is, your current mood, and you project all of that onto it. And that's cool.
totally. Before we get to our top five, which you have chosen, and we'll get into that momentarily, I'm just curious, kind of based on what you're saying there with regards to, you know, playing gigs and it being less, you know, attractive than the writing and the composing and the construction of it all. Does that make a three-year-old song that you may have emotionally moved on from that much harder to have to play live? I mean, like can you just step back into that headspace, or does it become a bit of a, fuck, this feels like an exam or something?
Sometimes, well, with really old songs that I don't feel that connected to, yeah, but, well, not like an exam. I mean, nothing is as hard as an exam. School sucks. But stay in school, kids.
I don't think there are, like, junior cert students. Or
you do your leaving cert and you put the head down. But no, it's, I wouldn't put it that, like, harshly or whatever, but... it's kind of weird when you start playing songs, like I had all these songs written and then it was all that stuff where no one was gigging for some reason. I can't remember what it was. So none of us were gigging for years, but then I got to start playing these songs live and it almost like kind of like hit home again. The songs felt like fresh to me. So it is kind of different and kind of sometimes just depending on my mood. Like sometimes a song I've written 3 years ago suddenly feels like weirdly emotional to me all of a sudden. It totally, totally depends on the day and what mood I'm in and how, what I'm going through at the time. Sometimes, like, a song that I wrote 3 or 4 years ago can have, like, a fresh meaning to me in the moment.
Well, let's find out what happens when you play these songs in Whelan's on May 5th and 6th, was it?
Yeah, Ball My Eyes Out.
And the album, of course, is Endless Affair. It's out now, so make sure you guys do all the necessary on that. But we'll move into our top five. So you're a special guest. Thank you for this. And you chose this topic.
I did.
So I don't know if I'm going to call it on the episode yet top five songs from movies or top five movie needle drops.
I think you should do top five needle drops.
Yeah, I think it should be needle drops. It's interesting because, like, I mean, you chose this and I want to know why in a second, but I will say that, like, I was kind of like, did we do this before? Because we've done a lot of movie adjacent music stuff. Mm. We've done, like, end credit stuff, opening credit stuff, and okay. Did actually, and last night, I must confess, I, you know, like, this is an honest podcast, so.
All right, yeah.
At around 11 p.m. last night, in a frazzled state of mind, I was like, holy fuck, 2 years ago we did songs written for movies and I'm like, oh no, and I was like, we can't, and I was like, oh no, actually that's fine. I was like, it's the top five I have, it doesn't really correlate there, it's fine and it's grand. Even if that's the case, Alva's coming into this fresh, she can pick whatever she wants, it's fine. I have to make sure that I don't repeat myself, so I've tried not to, but nonetheless, that's my existential crisis. I'm curious how you approach this topic, why you chose this topic, and how you feel about the motion pictures in general.
Well, I think my first loves were probably film and music, and I always have associated them together. And I used to want to be a director before I realized that that job's really hard. Of course, music is so easy and there's so much money in it. But
you made the right call.
Thank you. It's just very lucrative. But I actually just want to be a music supervisor. So this is just going straight into my
dream
portfolio.
Job. Oh my God, the dream job.
So I'm just going to be sending this around in my portfolio. It'll just be this. It'll be like, look how good I am at this kind of.
If you get one of those gigs, can you like drop my name?
I can give you a few kickbacks.
Yeah. Just be like, I know a guy.
He can do a few bits. Yeah. A few bits and pieces.
Okay, so this has been a childhood dream to be the soundtrack curator of a film.
Yeah.
Did any film in particular? I mean, maybe this will spoil the top five, so maybe we don't name names right now. But like, can you think of a time when you were like, that fucking ruled?
Oh my god, Into the Wild, which I didn't include in my list.
Okay.
But like that whole soundtrack with Eddie Vedder's soundtrack of that is so good. And I loved that because I watched it as an angsty teenager and was just like, maybe I want to, like, even though I really love my family, maybe I should like go to the wild and camp out and like, I don't know, die eating poisonous
spoilers,
fruit.
Mate.
Yeah.
Perish horribly.
Yeah. So many films. Like I always think, you know, you watch a horror film with the sound off. Oh, that's scary. It's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Like, there's loads of things. Music can change how you feel about a scene so much. And you're seeing it more. I'm really into like TV and film. I watch like a lot of stuff. You're seeing it more and more people playing with soundtracks using, you know, Handmaid's Tale and stuff like that. You know, they use really like empowering songs during scenes that are humiliating and playing with how those things, and especially more like needle drops of like famous old songs being used in modern films. I just think it's really interesting.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cool. Well, before we jump in, I will go first in this because it means you get to go last. So, you know, I think let the guests play out, I guess. It makes sense. You get the end credits. Are you feeling confident about your top five? Which, of course, I don't know what you've chosen. I will say that a friend of the show and regular guest, Zara Hedeman, took a sneak peek at your top five and she seemed thoroughly impressed.
She had some things to say. She seemed really happy with the first four and then not happy with the last one, which contentious.
She's never happy, though.
Yeah.
We'll see. Zara?
Yeah. Our top five umpire.
Oh, she almost came to the show, but she wussed out. Yeah. So another time, perhaps.
Yeah, this one's for you, Zara.
Okay, so you're feeling good. We're all feeling good. Okay, yeah. So it's a brilliant topic, but it's also, let's be honest, it's super broad in general. You're like, how do you possibly boil this down to just five? I could give you 200. I could give you 500. So what I did was, yeah, you did it. I'm sure it was easy for you. But for me, it was a stress headache. And I was like, what am I going to do? How am I going to do this? So what I did was, there's a bit of recency bias here for me in as much as I went to my Letterboxd account and I was like, what if Adam is already laughing at me? And rightly so. And I went back through stuff I've watched recently to see what would jump out from a musical perspective in my brain. And I picked five of those without going too far into it because if I was to spend a week trying to put this together, this would be a 25-hour long podcast.
Of course, yeah.
Nobody wants that. So let's pick something, though, that is embedded into the pop culture quite brilliantly and something I've been obsessed with since I was a very young man. So here's my number five, top five movie needle drops. Let's go. In your head on the TV screen, hey buddy, I'm wanting you to turn it on. He's a ghost, he's a god, he's a man, he's a guru. You're one microscopic cog in his catastrophic plan, designed and directed by his red right hand.
Sure is quiet.
God, look at this place. It's the town that dreaded sundown.
Yeah, I saw that movie. It's about a killer in Texas, huh?
Hey, so just think, if they make a movie about you, who's gonna play you? I shudder to think.
Brutal dig at Tori Spelling there, who of course would pop up in the sequel to this, I believe. That's Scream. The film is Scream, of course, from 1996, and the song is Red Right Hand by Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. And I do believe that song would go on to be the Peaky Blinders intro music, which I find really strange. But yeah, I remember, so Scream for me, are you a fan of the franchise? Are you a horror person in general? What's your...
Yeah, I've seen Scream. Yeah, I remember watching it with my sister when I was a kid.
Yeah, that sounds right. It is kind of a older sibling hand-me-down.
Like, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
My brother went to see it, so he's 8 years older than me. He went to see it in 96 when it came out. And so I would have been like 12, I guess. And I remember him coming home from the cinema and he was so excited about this film he'd just seen, this game-changing horror film, as it did in fact prove to be, that he told me the entire plot.
Sick.
At the just kitchen table. Yeah. Everything. Like spoiled the whole thing. And I was like, all right, cool. You know, I'm 12. It doesn't matter. And then when it came out in VHS, he got it and we watched it. And I was obsessed with it ever since. You know, you're too young to watch a horror movie of that nature. But I love the franchise. I even really enjoy the new one that was out recently. Like, it's still going. I think it's been a very strong series.
I didn't see the new one. Well, what's the satirical version of it?
Well, this is kind of the satirical.
Scary movie.
The parody. Yeah.
Scary movie. Sorry.
Yes. Scary movie.
I find it almost impossible to separate the two of them in my head. Almost impossible. I can't. Like, as in my head, they're the same.
The same thing, yeah. Well, that's the power of a strong parody. The first one of those was okay, I thought, if I recall correctly. But, like, yeah, this is the OG Scream. And I think the Nick Cave song has popped up more often because, like, it's in five, it's in six, it's in this one. So it became a bit of a recurring motif in the movie. And it was my first ever experience here in the cave. I was like, what is this incredibly gloomy, gorgeous, beautiful music? Mm. And I love how it's used. It's used kind of halfway through the movie. And, you know, I just thought it was so fucking violently cool, which of course he is. And he's one of those artists that I still haven't fully, you know, I'll dip in every now and then. I think, you know, I couldn't listen to Nick Cave every day because it's just so demanding, I think, and giving as well. But no, I mean, like, it's... I like, there's lots of cool needle drops in the Scream movies, but I thought this was the most kind of creepy one. And I also just associate that sound and even that dialogue, like, with a very specific time in my movie watching life and just becoming really excited, I think, about, you know, entertainment as a fucking form and just being like, just being overwhelmed. Like, and again, it was pre-internet, you know, it's like, it's very formative time. You know, you're just
so... You have
to
figure out, you have to like watch the things at the end and you like to film. You'd have to watch the credits to see what the song was.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And I was just like, also, of course, you know, either I did or my brother did, but I had the CD soundtrack to this.
Yeah.
And I listened to it over and over again on my ghetto blaster.
I'm already starting to think of soundtracks that I bought that I've like not put on this top five list.
Can you give me one?
I remember I went to HMV on Grafton Street like every week for months trying to find the Marie Antoinette soundtrack from the Sofia Coppola version of Marie Antoinette. And oh my God, I was obsessed with that soundtrack. It's so good. And eventually I remember after months they had one copy of it. And I kept calling and I was like, are you going to order it in soon? Whatever. Like, there's not a high demand for it or whatever. And then they had one copy of it and I got it and was obsessed with it. Now you can just look it up on Spotify.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, streaming has killed our interest in this kind of stuff. Because you play that stuff to death.
I rinsed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I watched this film to death on VHS. I played this CD overnight with, like, you know, a terrible cover of Don't Fear the Reaper. And I'm like, this is the best song of all time.
But and now, like some song that you didn't buy the soundtrack for ended up being some song that you ended up being like, wait, I actually am obsessed with this.
Yeah, yeah, always a nice discovery. But by the time Scream 3 rolled around, the soundtrack was like almost exclusively new metal. And I was like, this is just the greatest. It's like, what a union. So that's my number five. I love Scream. I think it fucking rules. I think it's a pop culture behemoth. And I still find it kind of weird that there's a Nick Cave song in it. But, you know, it works for me, so...
Great choice.
Yeah, it's over to you. What have you got to kick it off?
Sorry, I just kind of burped. Maybe you can cut that out. My number five is an absolute classic, The Graduate. Hello, Darkest, My Old Friend. Can I do that again?
You can.
Because I'm not meant to say the thing.
If possible.
Okay, this one is an absolute classic, so much so I think Adam thought it was my number one, but I felt like I can't do this one as number one. But it's the first kind of version of this that I saw where the music plays and completely changes the tone of that scene. It's the very last scene of the film and you're watching and it's meant to be a joyous moment and then this song starts playing and it just seeds this little bit of doubt and it suddenly becomes this like kind of really depressing bit, but I think it's just very genius. And I've seen it done a million times in cinema since, but I feel like this was the first version.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again. Because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walk alone, narrow streets of cobblestone, beneath the halo of a street lamp.
Yeah, so it's, for anyone who doesn't know, I mean, it's so famous, but it's the last scene of The Graduate, where Dustin Hoffman and the daughter run out of the church and they jump onto a bus and it's all very romantic and they're going to run away together. And it feels like this really like happy moment. And they've really like gone out and done this really romantic thing. They get in the bus, they sit down at the end of the bus, they're both smiling. And then they're just as the movie fades out, this song starts playing and it's like you can see the doubt in their faces. But if you paused it, and I actually did it this last night, I played that scene back and I got rid of the music. And if it was like happy music playing or no music playing, you could totally read it as them just sitting in silence together, but instead that song playing just gives it this like little eerie bit of like they've both just realized that was a crazy idea.
And this is, of course, music was
Dissonance.
Well, not the name of the song and the artist.
Oh, sorry, Sound of Silence by Simon and Garfunkel.
Yes, sorry. I'm a stickler for like, oh fuck, because I'm forever being like, I never even said what it was.
I never said it, yeah.
So I apologize for jumping in there.
That old tune.
Everyone
yeah.
knows it, but just, yeah. you know, even with the obvious ones, I'm like, that is, of course, the Beatles with, you know, Eleanor Rigby. Is this song like almost a victim of its own success in that regard? Like, because like it's unassociatable, if that's even a word, with anything other than this. And then when it does pop up in other stuff, it's just, it's almost parodic itself. You know, like you mentioned Scary Movie. It's like, I've seen this used in Watchmen and I'm like, that doesn't work, lads. You can't use that.
At a certain point, things come back around and they can be used for a new generation though. Like, you know, certain generations will always associate it with that. But if it was used on a TV program now, loads of kids would be discovering it for the first time.
Yeah.
We've seen what's happened with like Kate Bush running up that hill. Suddenly this whole new generation are like, cool new song.
Yeah, that does happen.
Yeah, and I think the same could be with this. Like, I'm sure loads of people haven't seen that film and wouldn't be aware of Simon and Garfunkel, you know.
So you're in favour of the metal band Disturbed and their famous cover of this, are you?
Sure.
Has that escaped you?
That has escaped me. I mean, I've actually probably heard it, but it's not.
Oh, it's not good.
Yeah. Okay, well then, no, I don't like it. Whatever you think.
But it's weirdly revered, right? Like,
is it?
There's a weird cult following attached to that song, and it's kind of like,
you listen to that.
And I think what happened there is you had a lot of kind of like metalheads being like, you know, I don't cry, bro, but you know, this gets me in the feels. May not even know that it's a cover. May not even know that it's associated with this film. When did you see this film for the first time, The Graduate?
It must have been around 10 or 11.
Definitely the right age to see The Graduate.
Yeah, probably totally inappropriate. I think I probably watched it with like an older sibling or maybe with my mum something. Mum's got great film taste. But I'd say my eyes were... But I mean, it's such an old film. Nothing actually happens. It's all...
Oh, it's all suggested.
And if I know anything about myself as a child, suggestions like that went straight over my head. I was like, wow, he really likes his friend's mom. It's so nice that they're friends.
So, like... Would you prefer if it did have the more kind of saccharine happy ending, or do you like?
No, I think it's so genius.
Yeah.
Because in reality, that's how it works. But you just don't ever see it in films put that way, where there's the happy ending and this romantic comedy, I guess, and that it's actually kind of sad. Because like in real life, if you did that, I mean, a week tops, you'd be like, oh, fuck. I've just like sacked off everyone I know.
On impulse,
to go on the lam with this guy. I'm freaking out. Yeah.
So what do you think happens to that couple?
They probably did give it a go for a week or two, and then they're like, ooh, and then maybe out of embarrassment they keep it going for a few months, but it's not going to work out.
It's doomed.
They don't know each other.
Okay. But like, what about those people who like, you know, they like, it's just, it's a Romeo and Juliet spark. That's all we need.
They killed themselves.
I was about to say. It ended fine for them.
Yeah, well, it ended for them for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I should note as well that I said off mic, but I was going to pick Talk Show Host by Radiohead from Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet, but I had as Romeo's motif, because it is gorgeous in that film. I love that film. But I've picked it before, so I didn't pick it. See, like, The Graduate, like, this usage of the song, which is, yeah, it's magnificent, but like, it's not The Graduate's fault, but like I would have learned of this first through like The Simpsons doing a parody of this.
Of course, yeah.
With Grandpa Simpson, and then like stuff like Wayne's World as well. It's just like, I guess that speaks to the fact that like it's just so strong in its pop culture leanings that like, and it was such a perfect choice. But I mean, like, I'd love the idea of sticking a different song over it though, just to see, just to fuck with
it. I did it last night.
Yeah.
Totally changes the vibe. It like, it can seem like they're, it completely, if you put like any kind of just like random kind of like nice sounding indie song at the end of that scene, I did it last night, perfectly lovely.
Wow.
Changes the ending entirely. It's so cool that a film, or sorry, a film can do that, that like they put the music in the end and it completely changes. It sows like this like seed of doubt in that scene and also in everything that's just happened.
What do you think of the argument though that like the song is too depressing, too modern, like as a standalone piece of music? Like,
I mean, are any of your favourite songs really happy?
Happy by Pharrell. No, I hate that song.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh no, listen, I'm into it. I'm all
about it. Yeah, I think people like to make that complaint, and those people probably still listen to the most depressing music ever.
Were they even fucking realizing it? Yeah.
Yeah.
It is wild though that this is as big as it is. And I wonder how much of it has to do with the film. Like, is it purely off the, like, was it like they were huge anyway.
They were huge anyway.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I mean, I must confess, I'm not as well versed in the world of Simon and Garfunkel as others are, so.
Well, I grew up listening to them.
Well, I grew up listening to nu metal, so.
Well, look. And here we are, coming together with our differences.
Absolutely. Speaking of...
And making things work, yeah.
No, my number four is not nu metal. I think this is an example of a song eclipsing the movie it was in. And I think it's I think it's amazing.
Ooh.
And the film deserves a bit of a fair shake as well. So here's my number four.
No.
But I do. It's because I'm with Etienne. It's difficult for me to spend time with you.
I don't suppose that there's any, you know, special reason that you should spend time with me, that is.
Of course there is. I like you. A lot.
Have you told this to ATN or...?
No. It's our secret.
Okay.
Look! There! The plankton. Shrimps. When they're disturbed, they glow. Come on!
Pretty great, right? So it's All Saints is Pure Shores. It's from the motion picture The Beach in 2000. Adam jumped in there to admonish me, though, because it turns out I picked Pure Shores before in top five Irish number ones from this century. But, like, I don't care. It's too good. And I want to talk about The Beach as well, but we'll get to that. Yeah, like, also in that scene, like, I was just like their flirtation in this moment. Like that's, like, you're talking about plankton, you know? Mm. At a time like this,
make plankton sexy.
Well, I mean, it's 2000 era Virginie Ledoen, the French actress, and it's like she can say whatever she wants.
Yeah.
It's reminiscent of that moment in Heat when Robert De Niro talks about iridescent algae, and then next thing you know, is macking on Amy Brenneman. But yeah, so The Beach. Have you seen the film?
Not, I think when I was a teenager, I having a breeze. What happened? Leonardo DiCaprio.
He made
his voice sounds like a cartoon.
I know.
He's
right?
So young in it.
Yes.
Like listening back to it, I'm like, is that a little tiny little baby?
When I downloaded this clip, I actually thought I'd pick like a, you know, someone had like pitch shifted it or something.
Yeah.
To like pirate it or to keep it for licensing reasons. And I was like, no, that is actually how he sounds.
Hey, it's me, Leonardo DiCaprio. So I'm on an island.
It's 2000. So he's coming off Titanic and he's like the hottest star in the world. And then he makes Crazy. The Beach with Danny Boyle, which was supposed to be Ewan McGregor. But then it went Ooh. To... Yeah, John Elliott. So basically...
Different vibes.
Danny Boyle and Ewan McGregor, of course, you know, came up together, did Shallow Grave, Trainspotting and A Lifeless Ordinary, and they were supposed to do The Beach. And then it all went wrong. And Boyle basically chose DiCaprio, or the studio chose him, or Boyle didn't do enough for McGregor. And then Danny Boyle and McGregor were not friends for about 13 years. There or thereabouts.
They had a little tiff, did they?
They fell out massively.
Until the second Trainspotting, right?
That brought them back together. And that's a great fucking movie. And it works, I think, because it's also, you know, it's about friendship and it's about people kind of coming back and yada yada. But The Beach, yeah, which was also, it was an absolute disaster of a film in terms of its critical reception. Don't think it did terribly well commercially either. I rewatched it. I rewatched it on New Year's Eve of all times. And I think it's a really fucking good movie. The book I remember enjoying as a teenager, even though, again, it's one of those things where you're like, I'm too young to be reading this. I don't even know what I'm reading, but it's cool, isn't it?
Yeah. Ooh, I think some of these people might be flirting.
Yeah. And so in this scene, though, like, I mean, it must be said, like, I mean, so they're in this beach community and this French gal is just about to cheat on her boyfriend with Leonardo DiCaprio. And it's very remorseless. It's just, she's just like, yeah, fuck it. I fancy
that happens
it.
In films. And you see these people and they're not even, they don't have an ounce of guilt in them, which I don't think, I think in real life, no, even if you're a prick, you're still going to be like, oh God, well, I shouldn't be cheating on someone. But in films, they're just like, it's as if the boyfriend you just saw them kissing or girlfriend you just saw them kissing 10 minutes ago is dead.
Yeah. And like there is a fallout to this in as much as like the next scene is DiCaprio and her boyfriend kind of having a row and him being like, look, I just want her to be happy, but you know, I hate the way this has happened, etc. And I think later on she's kind of like, yeah, that was kind of bad of me or whatever. But it was just real like, Jesus Christ. Like, and like the boyfriend's not in any way villainous. Like,
I do love in films where they're setting you up to like the main couple, but the two people are in different relationships.
Yeah.
So they just have to make like the boyfriend or girlfriend be a total dick
at
some point, and they're like, okay, but actually he's abusive or something. It's like,
No, not the case here. This is like a lovely young French couple.
I do think it's really lazy when they do the other thing though as well.
Yeah, massively. But this was like a really nice young French couple that Leonardo DiCaprio like just kind of like tagged along with, this like spoiled American student, and she can't resist him.
God, and then after Titanic where he was breaking up couples as well.
Yeah, he's a homewrecker is what we're getting at here. But let's talk about Pure Shores, because talk about a song that has stood the test of time, right?
Oh my God, it's so good.
It's incredible. Absolutely incredible. And I mean like
it's so weird sounding.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds oceanic, right?
Like, yeah, right, yeah, yeah.
And in the scene when they go underwater and all this kind of stuff, it's just like, I don't know, I mean, like, it was just, it felt to me like it definitely a bigger success story, I think, in terms of long-term pop culture than, say, the film. But
I certainly don't associate it with this film at all.
Not at all. Interesting.
Like, when I hear it, I'm like, oh, yeah. But, like, I was able to, like, clock what it was, but I would hear this song so much, and I've heard it so much since that I don't associate it with it.
I'm trying to recall the video. I know that there's parts where they are, like, kind of walking with, like, night vision on them, and I'm wondering if they do intersperse it with shots from the film. Because remember when that was a thing for a while? Not really so much anymore. The music video that had, like, the tie-in and, like, lots of scenes from the movie. That was a huge fucking deal in the 90s, early 2000s.
That's a cheap way of getting a music video done, am I right?
I'd say so, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I'll just take shots from this really high budget film. Yeah. Thank you very much.
That was actually one thing. There is one example of it, because it's like Top Gun Maverick when it was out last year, like One Republic have a song in it. And your man Ryan Tedder was like, he was like referring to the usage of the song in the film over the volleyball scene, which is almost the entire song because it's like a 2.5 minute song.
Is it the new Top Gun?
Yeah.
I went to see that.
I loved it. So you went to see it or you want to see it?
I went. I went.
What did you think?
It was a film.
Didn't like it?
It was definitely a film.
Oh my God. What is this?
I mean, it was just like, it was camp. It's camp.
It's very camp, yeah.
But then I went to see it and I was just like, as long as everyone's in on it being camp.
I think they are.
It's like all these like guys with their big muscles like pouring water all over themselves and like oiling each other up basically. And I'm like, this is, someone's going to suck someone off. I don't know what's going to happen. Like, surely, is this meant to be camp?
With the One Republic song playing over it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he referred to it as an $80 million music video.
Like, if we're okay with it being camp, but I'm sure there's a huge amount of lads out there who do not realise how camp it is.
Where did you go see it in America by any chance? Or was
no,
it?
I went to see it on a rooftop thing in Peckham.
That sounds cool.
It was cute. It was freezing, actually.
But, like, you know, there's definitely, like, a school of people who are very much, like, you know, saluting the film while they're watching it. You know, it's like, this is for my...
Okay, yeah, soldier.
A single tear, like, you know. But no, come on. Like it's Tom Cruise in Top Gun. Like, come on. There's no way that this film, you know, it doesn't have... what's the word I'm looking for here? Not an ulterior motive or anything.
Camp overtones.
Yeah. We'll go with that.
Overtones, undertones.
Oh, I think I was said it best just a few minutes ago. But nonetheless, Pure Shores by All Saints.
How did we get to Top Gun from there? I don't know.
I think the beach, you know.
I think we should just bring every film back to Top Gun.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
But I think the beach and Top Gun have things in common.
But you thought it was good. Like, yeah, or do you think really it was, I thought it was entertaining.
Wait, Top Gun?
Yeah.
Oh, you actually are bringing it back to Top Gun?
Yeah, I am.
Oh, no, I thought it was absolutely magnificent, yeah, from
magnificent.
Every... Oh, yeah, yeah. I thought
the storyline was good.
Brilliant, yeah.
I knew the acting was good.
Alva, I cried at the end.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I cried.
No, that's no judgment.
I cried the third time I went to see it.
Wow.
Saw it in Toronto, saw it in Dublin, saw it in Drogheda. World tour.
Wow, your world tour of world Top tour. Gun. Wowee. Look, no shade, bro.
Sounds like there's some shade.
I found it. I like almost all films, so I did like it.
You like almost all films?
If it's entertaining to me on any level.
That's a much different sentence.
Then I like it.
Okay.
I might not think it's good, but I like
things
it.
Things I find entertaining.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's.
Like, so if I see a film and it's like really bad, but it is entertaining to me.
Sure.
I like it. Like, what was that awful one? Mountain Time?
Wild Mountain Time, yeah.
I watched that twice. Hysterical.
I can't get past the trailer.
My favourite comedy.
Okay.
Took him out of Ireland in a year. Like, it was hysterically bad.
So where does Top Gun Maverick rank in this kind of Alvaretti mountain of good or bad?
I definitely, to me it was a comedy. A camp, like kind of cute, like little oof, little
romp.
There's
comedic things to it, but I think it's a multi-layered narrative, yeah?
Yes.
Also, when I went to see it, there was like a Tom Cruise PSA where he's like, "Oh my God, I'm so glad you guys are back in the movies. You know, like this is for you." Before we close this off, and I'm glad that we derailed into talking about Top Gun more than talking about the beach and All Saints, but I must ask, especially for certain people who listen to the show who I know are huge fans of him, how do you feel about Tom Cruise?
I think he's an amazing actor, but he's mad as a bag of spiders.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
but amazing actor. I've seen him, like, he's in some films he's in some of my favourite films. One in particular that he's absolutely phenomenal in.
Is that in this top five?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Okay, so we'll get to it. Great.
Mad as a.
Oh, yeah, he's completely insane.
Yeah, like, but yeah. So good.
So yeah. Good.
I think he's best when he kind of channels into his unhingedness.
His mania, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
His mania.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. Yeah, it is your number one. I've guessed your number one. Yeah, of course.
I know you have.
Okay, so it's not A Few Good Men then, which is fine, because I rewatched that recently as well, and I was like, this is just stunning popcorn entertainment. Yeah, and also to be fair, I think this is a top five where we should be encouraged to just chat about movies every now and then.
100%. I'd be disappointed if we didn't talk good. About Tom
but
Cruise.
But in the interest of moving things along, I will stop talking now. That was my number four. Can we please have your number four? And of course, if you recall, a bit of mystery in the intro.
Mystery.
Thank you.
Okay, so I love this song, and I used to listen to this song all the time on my Walkman, like little CD Walkman when I was a kid. And I had a Greatest Hits CD that had this on it. And it's like a real dancey fun song, kind of, I guess. But I used to think the lyrics were so goddamn sad. And I used to listen to it all the time, and I used to listen to the lyrics. And this is when I was like a nerdy, like 9-year-old or whatever. And I used to just listen to it over and over again. I just think it was the saddest song ever. And then I saw it in a film, and this is, what did you call it? Like recency bias.
Yeah.
This is I kind of leaned into that with my list because I was like, I'm just going to pick the ones that that pop into my head first.
You kind of have to with this one, I think.
Yeah. And this is a very recent film from last year, which I think made everybody who saw it cry. And what they did with this song, which is a beloved song of mine, was very interesting and brilliant.
Can I guess what this is?
Please.
Is it Under Pressure from After Sun?
Yes, you're so good. Oh my God.
Turned away from it all like a blind man. Sat on a fence, but it don't work. Keep coming up with love, but it's so slashed and torn.
Was everyone else bawling, crying at that bit? Oh my God.
Look away. Yeah, deep sighs.
I just love, like, I've always thought the lyrics were so sad, but I think you can, like, it's so disguised because the music is, you could totally dance to that, not thinking about how sad the lyrics are. And when they mix it in with the kind of main motif of the film soundtrack, it's just heartbreaking. And with the story around it and the some good friends screaming, let me out. It's just like, so heartbreaking. Amazing film and
gorgeous film. Yeah,
The way it breaks into the in the scene, she's viewing her dad in the moment, but as a kid, kind of dancing while they're on this last holiday together, and then it cuts to this nightmare she has of him in a rave where she's trying to reach him, and there's strobe lights, and she's just seeing this like slight view of him, like it's like this memory that she's trying to grasp onto while this is playing over, and it's just an absolutely stunning piece of cinema. So heartbreaking, so brilliant. So
I agree with every word. So yeah, so that is, of course, for anyone who doesn't know, it's David Bowie and Freddie Mercury with Under Pressure
in the film After Sun
by Charlotte Wells.
Phenomenal film.
Stunning film. Michael Pope, who was on our most recent two episodes ago, he was on our review of Tar on No Popcorn. He like texted me a few weeks ago, and he was like, David, he's like, you didn't warn me about After Sun. And he was like, I was like, fuck, did it get you? Did you cry? And he said, David, it's one of the best films I've ever seen. And it fucking is.
Oh, like, my t-shirt was soaking wet from me bawling, crying, like, and having to like wipe my eyes with my t-shirt that I was wearing, and was just like, I was in bits. I couldn't believe how upset I was. I don't usually get like that at films. I'll be kind of like, ooh, tear, that's fine. Absolutely howling.
Did you go to the cinema?
No, thank fuck. I was in my bedroom.
Okay.
Thank God. Oh my God. And you'd swear like, Jesus. Yeah, it was brilliant though.
Yeah, I feel like the general public will like haven't been able to escape this film, After Sun, of course, starring our own Paul Mescal and the amazing child actress Frankie Correa.
Unbelievable. Their chemistry is brilliant.
It's just, and like, if you haven't seen it, go see it or watch it. It's on Mubi, you know, go check it out there. I was very kind of apprehensive about it because, you know, I lost my father last year and I was like, oh, fuck, that's obviously going to be, you know, in the mix. And it certainly is. But weirdly enough, I definitely cried, but I didn't like have a full on. I didn't have the reaction you had, but I do remember very vividly when I left the cinema and I was walking around Smithfield waiting to meet a friend of mine. And I was just like, can anyone give this man a hug? This boy needs a hug.
Yeah.
But in a beautiful way. I found it so freeing. I found it just so gorgeous. And like, I can't believe, by the way, I know she made a couple of short films. Cannot believe that this is Charlotte Wells' debut feature film.
I cannot believe it. It's so accomplished. And like, it's so hard to touch a subject like that and make it one original and also make it not feel like it's some sort of complete assault on your emotions or your emotions are being, sometimes with films like that, I feel like my emotions are being manipulated to cry.
Yeah, of course. But and music, of course, is a huge proponent of that. Like, there's nothing, I don't know about you, but I find there's nothing more annoying than if you're watching a film that does have the emotion in it and you're like, oh no, those strings don't need to be there. Like, you're telling me how to feel. And I actually, the actors have been doing such a great job. And, you know, I watched a film called My Sailor, My Love recently, which is really, really good. And it's like kind of a bit of like an older person romance and how the familial ties that bind ultimately destroy us. And it's really stunningly acted. And all of the narrative like that that's kind of buried under the surface, I found very affecting. But I was really distracted by the score. I was like, oh, fuck. I was like, you're getting in the way. You're telling me how to feel. Whereas, yeah, this score, which I think is Oliver Coates the name of the... I'll have to look it up.
I actually don't know. Yeah.
Who composed After Sun score. Like, there's a track on there called One Without. And my God.
It's so subtle. Like, especially to take such a well-known kind of needle drop moment and to turn it into something else. Like, the moment sneaks up on you from being this really cute, joyous moment where she's just watching her dad dance to being this like really heartbreakingly sad moment of her as an adult trying to reach him in a dream.
Yeah. I found it sad to begin with though, because I felt that it was like, it's one of the few times that the Paul Mescal character like is actually able to switch off whatever he's going through.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, that's escapism, but it's escapism as like hurt.
Mm.
And it's just, yeah, so gorgeously judged. How did you find the scene where she sings Oriema karaoke?
I found that part of the film, and one of the other reasons I think it's such a brilliant film is it didn't just like make me sad and it didn't just make me feel one thing. I didn't just pity him the whole time. At that scene, from that scene starting where he won't sing with her till the bit where he disappears off and she's left on her own, she's locked out of the room, I was furious. I don't think I've ever been so angry at a character in a film. I was honestly sitting there watching it being like, you bastard, your daughter is on her own, she's so vulnerable, like, just, and also so riddled with anxiety that something was going to happen to her every time she came in contact with anyone. I felt so much. I was so stressed out. I was honestly like sitting there with like furious and also so stressed out something was going to happen to this gorgeous little kid who, you know, is representative of the director, so it all feels just so much more real. Yeah, so I find that bit so stressful. It just an unbelievably emotive film in that way.
Would you watch it again? It's a film I do want to revisit, but I know I'll have to really build up to it.
I will watch it again at some point. I feel like I'd watch it again in like a few years if I was showing it to someone.
On a rooftop cinema in Peckham, perhaps?
Yeah. Maybe bougie.
Double bill with Top Gun Maverick.
But also the girl in that film, she's the characters around the same age that I would have been that year.
Okay.
So all the little kind of like pop culture references of the things she's like thinks are cool and the kind of getting the thing done in her hair and everything, all that like really hit home for me because it's very much like going to Spain on your holidays and getting this little thing done in your hair and playing like the same kind of toys and all that kind of stuff. It all felt really real to me.
Fuck yeah. But again, even like this song, like, cause I think you're right. There is a melancholy to it as is. And there's a moment in the film Gross Point Blank where Under Pressure is used, and it's used so wonderfully. It's this gorgeous moment of kind of existential crises that's happening, and it's mixed in with the hope as well. But yeah, I've always been so blown away by the overwhelmingness of the song that it never really occurred to me to just like fracture it up, which is what they do here.
It's brilliant. Yeah, they just take the isolated vocals and put it over something else, and it completely changes the vibe of the song.
Yeah, and it's become like its own. It's become like its own meme, you know, amongst people just being like, "Who wants to be sad now?"
Which is amazing because I remember as a kid being like, "These lyrics are tragic."
I'm not saying they're not, but like, I'm maybe like, I'm not a lyrics first kind of person.
I am. That's probably why.
So maybe I'm a terrible human being, but you know, you are a songwriter. So like, that's what you're drawn to.
Yeah.
But like, I'm just curious as to what, like how that jumped out at you immediately when you were younger. Like what made you go, fuck, this is tough.
Watching some good friends screaming, let me, and then the turn away from it all, just from town to sat on the fence, but I don't know. And like the way he sings it is very emotive. I'm not obviously going to do a full cover of it now, but they're just, the lyrics just stand out as being very lonely.
Interesting.
It's clearly about like depression and angst and stuff, but it's hidden within quite like bouncy music.
I've always been just so overwhelmed by Mercury's vocal in particular and just the build and the boom that I'm just like, you know, and again, I think we all love that juxtaposition of here's a sad song wrapped up in a triumphant thing and the real, you know.
It's a classic.
Yeah. Wow. No, fucking amazing choice. I'm really glad you chose this one.
Thank you.
Because I thought about it and I was like, I think I picked Under Pressure before for the Gross Point Blank thing. And I was like, maybe Alva will pick this. Who knows?
Okay, good. Okay, so, I'm glad.
I'm really, really glad you did. Number three for me. It's one of those ones where it's like, oh my God, how could you pick One Needle Drop from this filmmaker? And this is kind of, I mean, this wouldn't even be my favorite one, but I think it is particularly evocative. So we'll hear a bit of the scene and how this figures into play. So let's go.
Don't be rude. Drink your drink, but do it quickly. Say goodnight and go home. This is a moral test of oneself, whether or not you can maintain loyalty. Because being loyal is...
I do love John Travolta in this sequence. That is, of course, from Pulp Fiction. The song is Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon, which was originally written and released by Neil Diamond in the 60s. 67, I think, maybe 68. The band doing the cover of this is a band called Urge Overkill, and I have never heard of them before or since. I played my brother's Pulp Fiction CD soundtrack to death back when I was 10 or something. I always find like I was 10 and I was obsessed with Pulp Fiction. That makes no sense.
Yeah,
but I was. Yeah, like I don't get it.
I watched it around the same age and found it kind of like really too tense and scary, and it's kind of put me off for life.
Really? Okay. Yeah. I do love Quentin Tarantino, I will say. Yes, he's got plenty of flaws and I'm happy to hear them all, but I love his work. I really, really do. And I love his work with music and his music selections and I don't know where he stumbled upon some early 90s release of a, you know, cover of a Neil Diamond song and decided to put it in this movie. So it's a scene where, you know, John Travolta and Uma Thurman have won the dance competition. They go back to the house for one drink and he's obviously attracted to her, but it's his boss's wife, so, you know, do not do that, mate. And while he's upstairs having his, you know, listen, man, you're just going to go home, it's fine, she overdoses on his drugs, and it goes from there. I rewatched Pulp Fiction about a year ago, and it was kind of that thing where I was like, look, I've seen this thing so many times, especially, you know, when I was way too young to see it, and then into my teens or whatever. I'm like, I wonder if time hasn't been kind to it. Maybe it's not quite the godlike thing I thought it was. And no, it still is. Like, it still is. I wish it didn't have the scene where Tarantino popped up and said the N-word, but you can't have everything. But I do think it's quite a masterpiece of pop culture. And that's what his films are. The barrages to me, and the music is always really interesting. And what's he going to... Like, he's a human jukebox. So I couldn't... Like, this, like I said, this wouldn't necessarily be, like, my favourite Tarantino pick, but... You know, again, I was like, oh yeah, I love the kind of contrast in that scene. And I always love... I fell in love with this song. I thought it was fucking beautiful. And of course, it made sense that it was by Neil Diamond because... Neil Diamond was always being played in my house as well. There was like vinyls downstairs and stuff. But like I say, Tarantino's divisive. Where do you stand on him? And did you go back to Pulp Fiction after childhood or not?
I saw it when I was about 10 and then I would have watched it again when I was like 16 or 17. I mean, it's one of those things where I'm like, I can see that it's really good. And I get, obviously, like the music and stuff is always really great in his films. And I've watched most of his big films. I've mostly watched other than a few or that are just... outrageously violent that I'm just like not interested. Like I just don't give a shit about Kill Bill.
Oh wow, That was my first one I saw in the cinema.
That's the first one I saw in a friend's house and it scared the shit out of me. But I was only like 10 again. I shouldn't have been watching it. They just don't move me in any way. And I think that's what I go to films for. It's like I can appreciate the artistry of it and the skill without being like, I would never go back to it. And I wouldn't, if someone else was watching it, I'd give it a go. And I'd be like, that's really cool. But that's what it is to me. It's like really cool. I'm technically proficient. It doesn't do anything for me emotionally, I think, is my thing with Tarantino.
That's interesting. I was kind of maybe moving into that direction with him, I thought, for a time. And then Once Upon a Time in Hollywood came on, which listeners of the show will be rolling their eyes already, because I can never stop praising that film enough. I've seen it eight times.
I thought it was cool. But again, I was like emotionally cold.
Yeah, I should have actually picked the fucking Out of Time needle drop from that one by the Rolling Stones, because it is done brilliantly. But that's fine. Like, you're allowed to be emotionally cold.
But I also, it's not like I'm like, I hate him, I think he's crap. I'm just like, he's really good and his films are excellent and I feel nothing.
Interesting.
I feel nothing other than like impressed.
I'm curious what, like, not looking for like a massive list here, and obviously we've just talked about After Sun, but can you give me an example of a film that like has moved you to the point you're like, wow, like I'm completely blown away by this?
I think most of them are on my list, but okay. Yeah, I mean, from this film, I'm going to pick a song, and this is a film that really moved me recently. I watched it last year, and I actually then rewatched it last night, because after picking out this scene, I then was like, I kind of need to rewatch this now, because it's so brilliant. It's this scene where, it's like the last scene of the film where the main character sees her ex-boyfriend through a window with his new partner. And it's just like this little tiny snapshot moment, which I feel like if you're from Dublin, you've probably had that moment with an ex where you've seen them from afar because the city is the size of a dinner plate. But yeah, I mean, go ahead.
A stick, a stone, it's the end of the road. It's the rest of a stump, it's a little alone. It's a sliver of glass, it is life, it's the sun. It is night, it is death, it's a trap, it's a gun. The open wounds, a fox in the brush. The knot of the wood, the song of a thrush. The wood of the wind, a cliff, a fall. A scratch, a lump, it is nothing at all. It's the wind blowing free, it's the end of a slope. It's a beam, it's a void, it's a hunch, it's a hope. And the riverbank talks of the waters of March. It's the end of the strain, it's the joy in your heart.
So that's Waters of March by Art Garfunkel from the film The Worst Person in the World, which is a Norwegian film that came out last year or the year before, I think.
Yeah, one of those. I think it was last year.
I mean, critically lauded. I watched it again last night because I wanted it to be fresh in my mind, and I just, for my own viewing pleasure or whatever, I watched it again last night. Just, there's so few films for a woman my age. There's so few films where you see a woman going through the world through whatever, it's a 15-year period or whatever, and, you know, the secondary characters are the men she's in relationships. I feel like I've seen that film done with them from the male perspective 1,000 times and never really from a woman's perspective. And I remember my friend Callum texted me saying, you need to watch this film because the main character kind of reminds me of you. Especially the whole thing where I also love that all of them at some point, like in the film, say like, oh, I just feel like the worst person in the world. Kind of, they like, they don't actually say that because that's like too on the nose, but they basically, that feeling of going through breakups and relationships where at times you just feel like such a jerk just moving through the world. I love that character. She's so charming but so flawed. And you see her mature on screen and all this, her, the way she like moves forward in the world is amazing. And also that unbelievable, if you haven't seen this film, go see it. All you have to do is look up the, I think it's in the trailer anyway, that scene where she pauses everything in the city and runs through, I don't know how, it's just so stunning. And she runs through the whole place to find this guy that she's decided she's fallen in love with. And I love that, I just love that it, at no point do you get any real answers about life or anything. It's just, life is like what you make of it, and her own contentment comes from her fulfilling herself as opposed to her fulfilling herself through relationships. I just think the message is really fresh.
Yeah, no, it's magnificent. I remember I was talking to my ex-girlfriend and she said that she saw it And of course, I'm hilarious. So I said, oh, they made a documentary about you? Ha ha, aren't I great?
Zing.
Yeah, she laughed. It was fun. You know, everyone had a great time. We all partied.
It's so cool. It's just such a great, like, none of the, and they don't make any of the boyfriends absolute bastards or anything. No. It's just, it's so well done. You see, like, the nasty parts of her personality being brought out through the breakups, the nasty parts of theirs being, like, it's so brilliant. Like, it's just so well acted, everything. I couldn't fault it. And that scene just struck me as being so brilliant because there's a peace to it. There's contentment that comes with age, and maturity of her watching this ex-lover through a window and he's moved on and he's with a new partner. And she, for a second, she looks sad and then she seems so at peace with it and kind of like happy for him. Nothing is said, none of it's on the nose, and then you just go see her back in her apartment, like, working on stuff, and she's doing what she wants. But we've all lived that, like, we've all seen someone from afar and been like, oh, wow, look at them having that little moment. They used to be having that moment with me.
And they're right there. Like, I mean, I could go over, I'm not going to.
But I'm not going to because it'll be awkward. It's just really beautiful, and that song choice is stunning, and it's kind of melancholy, but it is really peaceful.
Yeah, no, it's a tremendous film. She's a really, really interesting character. And like, the thing about the boyfriends, they're not villains, again, to use that word.
I love that,
And like, her behavior on occasion, it's like, in one relationship for sure, there's elements to it where it's like, well, you know, yeah, she probably is better off without this, but like, doesn't end it perfectly at all.
Yeah.
And it's like, but again, it's like, that's life. It's like, people don't do that always. Like, it's not, you know, a Hallmark fucking movie.
Yeah, and I love how messy it is, and she leaves a boyfriend because she's kind of decided that she's fallen in love, but she is just running away. And the whole time is he's like, you just like ran away because it got hard. And at one point he asks her, like, why didn't you tell me that you had met someone else? And she doesn't give a proper answer. She just says, I wouldn't have dared.
Yeah.
Like, just like, because I didn't, like, there's no real answer there. It's just like, I just couldn't. It's so brilliant. Phenomenal film. One of my favorites of the last few years.
I think we can all agree that the real worst person in the world in this movie is that she's at a party and she puts on One Thing by Amory and someone pulls out the aux cord while the song is on to put on some soft jazz or something.
So fucking rude.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
First of all, that's an amazing song. Like, One Thing is one of the great fucking pop bangers of all time. Second of all, everyone's having a good time. Like, and he just yanks out the cord. It's like, no.
It's such a good way of, but that has happened at parties a million times, especially if you're at a party with like people who see you as the junior. And it must be like that. It really expresses that they're like, she's the young girlfriend of one of their peers.
She's not really part of our.
We'll all like this. Yeah, she's not really part of our group. So her music taste is silly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, no, it's great. I loved this when I saw it. And I must go back to it. But again, I was like, oh, it is amazing, but oof, it's close to home, you know? You're just like.
Beautiful. Yeah. I watched it last night and it was really actually worth the rewatch.
All right.
Yeah.
I think that's also on Mubi. For some reason, I'm allowing Mubi to sponsor the show for no money.
And you get your first week for free. And if you use the code...
number two for me, Keeping It Art House. This film is from 1994. This is a cover of a song that you all know. And it's used so beautifully in this movie. So here we go. Yeah, that's Dreams by the Cranberries, but not as we know it. That is a Cantonese cover by the actress and pop singer Faye Wong. This is taken from the motion picture Chungking Express, which came out in 1994. It's a Wong Kar-wai film. And I only saw it for the first time about 2 years ago. And then I saw it again recently in the IFI. They did a Wong Kar-wai season. And it's 5 stars. Like, it is one of the best films I've ever seen. It's magnificent. And it is this incredible kind of... It has two narratives in it. And it's like both of them concern like lovelorn people who just can't make it work. And, you know, I don't want to say too much about it plot wise, but like it's just so vivid. Like the way it's shot, the way it's put together, people bouncing off each other. And crucially, kind of like towards the end of this movie, there's a cop and he's obsessed with a failed relationship. This woman has left him. She's like an air hostess. And then he goes to this fast food joint every day. And there's a kind of a, long before the kind of term was even coined, there's a very much a manic pixie dream girl who works there, played by the Faye Wong character who's singing that song there. And like, she constantly plays on the radio. She plays like California Dreamin' by the Mamas and the Papas, like at full blast. And you know, he's always asking her to turn it down and stuff. So music plays a big part in this movie. But like this song kind of comes in where essentially she, it's clear that these people have a crush on each other, but they don't know how to say it to each other. And what happens in a kind of a madcap way is she begins to break into his apartment while he's at work and clean it for him. And so while listening to this song. And so she's like making his life better, doing little kind of small things in the background while clearly pining for him. And he's not noticing it because he's still hung up on this other person. And the film concludes with just a magnificent scene that like I just think is so gorgeous. And then once it hits the credits, this blasts on and just comes in again, this cover of Dreams. And I remember like just leaving the cinema there recently and I just had the biggest smile on my face. I was like, aww, it's so beautiful. It's so perfect. So
I must check it out. I haven't a breeze.
I really, really think you'd love it. Like, I think it's great going in knowing even less than what I just said, but that's not too much in spoilers.
We can exchange each other's lists after this.
We must do that. But there's a piece in the really, really good film website, Little White Lies, which talks about this and said, if Faye Wong was already something of a pop star prior to 1994, Chungking Express launched her to new heights, but it wasn't until the album that she released that she truly established her new identity, and it was her shimmering cover of Dreams that cemented her move into alternative rock, elevating her above the traditional canto pop ballads playing on the radio. The song was basically a massive hit in Hong Kong and around the world. But I mean, like, it's that weird thing where you're like, really? Like the Cranberries, Dreams, like that traveled to such, I know they were big in the States and stuff, but it's like, really? And there's a quote here where it says, by 1996, the Cranberries had become household names in Hong Kong. The success of Dreams thrust the Irish band into the cultural mainstream in a manner that was highly unusual at the time for a Western artist. I think Noel Hogan from the Cranberries says, I don't ever remember hearing of anyone else getting their song covered and released in the way that Dreams was down there. The story that we've been told was that Faye Wong's version of it became the favourite song of the Chinese Prime Minister's wife. Mm. When she'd go places, they'd play the song and it made it a hit. They ended up playing some like insane 12,500 capacity show that they were like,
mad.
Surely people aren't going to turn out for this or, you know, give us the time of day. But no, like they were like heroes over there.
Amazing.
Because of its usage in this incredible film. So yeah, Chungking Express is the name of it. I think it's one of the best films I've ever seen.
Whoa.
Go that
He's
far.
Talking big talk.
Listen, it's unbelievable. It's Oof. Gorgeous. And again, I don't know. I mean, like how do you feel about like end credits music? Like, I mean, like it's that can because like people have this
Good
thing
stuff, like two of mine are last scene.
But people have this thing where it's like you know you remember like the end of a movie. So it's like you can make an average movie, but if you've a great fucking ending, you know, people even
recency biased as you say.
And if you blast a great song over that end credits, you know,
play your best song last. That's why they do it at gigs too.
Do you play your best song last at gigs?
Maybe. I mean, that's in the eye of the listener.
What is your
the
best song?
Ear of the listener. what's my best song?
Yeah.
Yet to be written.
What an answer. What an answer. All right. That was my runner up. What have you got for us next?
Okay. My runner up is from a film that is dear to many indie film lover hearts. It's from a producer who I adore. He's also worked with Fiona Apple. Did one of my favourite Fiona Apple albums. And this song just hits me right in the feels. I think it's really sweet, nostalgic, beautiful. I'm sure you'll recognise it straight away.
Wait, what am I doing? You know something, Freddy? You don't scare me anymore. Ow!
Joel! Jolie, get up! Come on, it's not worth it. They're not worth it, Joel! La, 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 he's not listening! Come on, Joel!
Stupid!
I'm so ashamed.
It's okay. You're a little kid.
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah.
It's where I lived. I wish I knew you when I was a kid.
Do you like my pink hat? Here, look, feel better. You can really kill me this time. It's my turn. Go. One,
You're
two,
really
three.
Gonna die, though.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
One, two, three. Mm.
Dad.
Oh, my mom. It's okay. We're playing. It's not real.
So that's John Bryan with peer pressure from the film Turn Us and Shut Up Spot His Mind. Got the little ding, ding, ding. My heart.
It took me a second to realize what it was. And I am scared to ever go back to this film. Because I saw it in the cinema, adored it, bought it on DVD, definitely watched it at least once.
Yeah, I wore the DVD out.
But I don't think I've watched it in about 20 years, and I know that it's going to fucking destroy me, so...
It's kind of brilliant to watch it, even if you're gone. I watched it after a breakup once, and it actually made me feel weirdly better.
Okay.
Because it's like, okay, well, I guess you have to have the memories, I guess, rather than none. It's kind of interesting. I implore you to go back. But if it doesn't go well, don't.
It can't not go well. I recall it being a pretty brilliant film.
I mean, the soundtrack is just Kiss Kiss Kiss, so good.
When was the last time you watched it?
Maybe 3 or 4 years ago. It's one I return to like every 3 or 4 years since it came out.
You know those films that you're like, I know this is going to rule. I know it's going to be great, but it's going to take something from me. I'll watch Iron Man 2 instead.
Because I love to cry, man.
I've had people say like they're like, what's with your fucking letterbox? You just watch trash, and I'm like, it's easier. I know Cinema Paradiso is right there, and I adore it.
Yeah,
but I'm like, look, I'm just gonna just watch the Iron Man films.
Okay, I would never go to Iron Man, but I would go to like 13 Going on 30.
Sure, yeah.
Or How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, like real 2000s early like rom coms. That'd be my thing. I can't stand any Marvel stuff.
Just like Heaven with Reese Witherspoon, where she's in love with the ghost. Oh, she is the ghost, I believe. Yeah,
It's not one of my go to ones, but I do know it. Just all those ones, like Failure to Launch, just garbage, trash, but so good.
Yeah. It's like fast food or something. You're just like, I don't need to commit to this. I can look at my phone. I can make the bed. Mm. I can
vaguely remember the first time I watched it. It is a very comforting nostalgia.
Sorry, this?
No, the other films. Yeah, yeah. This is comforting nostalgia to me. I just think it's a beautiful film. I've read like the original script and everything. The original script has a bit more storyline around the creation of this device that deletes your memories.
So for anyone who hasn't seen Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, how would you outline it?
So it's two great actors, Kate Winslet and Jim Carrey play a couple who have broken up, gotten back together, broken up, and they decide, he realizes that she has deleted her memories of him through this clinic, this like makey-uppy clinic that deletes the memories of people that have broken your heart or people who've died, so you can get all of that removed. He realizes that she has done it, so then he goes to do it himself, but the film drags you into his memories of her, and in halfway through the deletion process he realizes he doesn't want to lose these memories because he wants to keep them. He's like, there's one point where they have this beautiful memory of, I think, them in bed together or something. That's like real early on, kind of beautiful golden light under the bed sheets, kind of gorgeous memory, and he's like, no, I want to keep this one. And all of a sudden he's trying to hold on to her and hide her in different memories, so you see like flashes of different parts of his life where he's trying to hide her in these memories, and it's just really beautiful look at it. And then some like brilliant performances, like Kirsten Dunst plays a brilliant kind of character on the outside as well, who works for this clinic, who's got her own thing going on. It's really great. It's just a great film, great soundtrack, done by John Ryan as well. And Beck has one of the main songs on it as well. It's like the main needle drop, I think, as well. Everybody's got to learn sometime.
And did the music hit you just as hard as the narrative when you saw it?
Yeah, those soundtrack songs are just really beautiful. I actually go back and listen to them pretty frequently. They're very relaxing. And that little song there is so, it sounds like childhood.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And even like when the clip played again, it was a combination of having not seen it for so long that I was just like, what is this? And I was like, that's Jim Carrey. Like, what like what emotional film was he? And I was like, oh no. I was just like,
the emotional performance. Like,
oh,
no. Yeah.
Oh Christ, it's Eternal Sunshine.
Yeah. And I just love the way they play with the memories and stuff in the film, that like there's one bit that is so freaky, but they go to turn a character around, but he only remembers seeing the back of his head. So every time he pulls at him, he turns around and the guy has no face. Like, there's loads of creepy real sci-fi bits, and I love sci-fi, so it kind of brings that sci-fi element into a romance, which I think is just very cool.
Wow, so After Sun and Eternal Sunshine in this top five, and I'm pretty sure I know what your number one is, so are you okay already?
I love a sad song and a sad film, but I have a sunny disposition, I would say.
You do. You definitely do, yeah. But, you know, it's like that thing we talked about with Under Pressure, you know, it's like the...
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the melancholy wrapped up in
You gotta have both.
In a sunshine package. Yeah.
Imagine if all my films were just like really... I don't even know. I can't even get an example of one that I'd pick that would be like really weirdly happy.
All your films or all your songs?
If all my films were... and songs, sorry.
Yeah. Well, you are going to be a filmmaker someday. We have,
of course,
we have decreed this.
You and I are going to direct a new, the new Top Gun.
I would fucking love that.
Top Gun.
The saddest and the campest, if that's possible.
Sad Gun. Okay, yeah, so
Sad Gun.
Number one for me is a bit of an obvious choice, I think.
Ooh.
But this is a ridiculous song, and like I learned some interesting information about the song this week, which I'll get to in a moment, but also. This song was done dirty because it's on the fucking end credits and isn't in the actual film itself. But it really is like that thing we were talking about earlier on where it was such a tie-in. And I remember the video, the whole thing. Adam, take it away. My number one.
Spin it. That when it snows, my eyes become a lot and the light that you shine can't be seen.
Yes, of course. It's Kiss from a Rose by Seal, which appeared on the soundtrack to Batman Forever.
Yeah. I was like, what film was this? And I was like, Batman?
Yeah. Batman Forever. Man. The third live-action Batman movie, if you don't count the TV show adaptation of the 60s. So this song, like, I presumed it was like either written for Batman Forever or certainly out and of its time, but not quite. It's from his second eponymous album, which came out in 94. So this came out in July of 1994 and was included in, of all things, the film The Neverending Story 3 in the same year.
What the hell?
Yeah. So it's not even technically Batman. Batman has no ownership here. Batman Forever doesn't come out until like June 95 when it inexplicably gets re-released and attached to that movie.
Batman ripped off The Neverending Story or whatever, 3?
Well, 3, which, you know, again, you know, is the story ever going to end? Apparently not. No.
Yeah, never ending.
No,
yeah.
An endless affair, if you will.
Oh my goodness. Whoa. Listen, that's why circle, baby.
That's why they pay me the big bucks. But this song was written in 1987, apparently, so it was around for quite some time, and Seal didn't like it. He said after he wrote it, he felt embarrassed by it and threw the tape of the recording in the corner. So Seal did not present this to his producer, Trevor Horn, until the recording sessions for his second eponymous album. And back in 2015, he said, to be honest, I was never really that proud of it, though I like what Trevor did with the recording. He turned that tape from my corner into another 8 million record sales, and my name became a household name.
So mad. But it happens all the time with songwriters. They're just like, I don't like that song that made me famous.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I mean...
Like Brass in My Pocket, doesn't Christy Hind hate that song?
I think so. Kings of Leon famously hates Sex and Fire, but it's not
also
for
the rest of us.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, true.
It's like, oh, you hate it, so do we. Yeah.
But like, I don't understand. Like that's one thing. This is Kiss from a Rose.
I know. Like, sorry, this isn't even like you can tell with some songs. You're like, yeah, of course you hate that song. It's garbage. But like, no.
Like, the notion
this song's really good.
Yeah, the notion of Seal like coming home from the studio, duetting good today.
And
nah.
The lyrics are good and the vocal
trash.
Is good.
I wrote a trash song.
It's not like it's like, oh, it's really obvious. I can see why he doesn't like it. It's like, this is about you got, bro.
Yeah, like, apparently like it was out and then it dropped out of the charts. Joel Schumacher, who made the third Batman movie, called Seal up and said, can we use the song to play over a love scene between Nicole Kidman and Val Kilmer? Now, I've seen that film about 57 times.
No, it's just at the end, isn't it?
I think it's just at the end. I don't think that first of all, there is no love scene. There's a couple of like, it is, I will say, it's a very horny Batman film. I remember.
Yeah, it's certainly. Yeah.
So I would have been like 11 going to see this movie.
And even the toys. Like,
still 10, possibly.
I was looking at the toys from that. I had have the toys from that particular Batman franchise. Mm. And I tell you, Catwoman, in comparison to the Catwoman that my niece and nephew have, it's like a different species. Like, they're just like, the Catwoman from, like, the 90s has nipples.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, like, my niece is doing this, like, normal human body, but this is when she's like, rare, and, like, real. So ridiculous. You know, when we're like, this is actually inappropriate. I don't think we should let them play with this.
I remember going to
so
see this.
So sexed up.
I remember going to see that again. I was on the verge of turning 11 or something, and I was like, what the fuck is going on with Nicole Kidman's character? Like, I've never seen someone who's more desperate to fuck Batman. And it's like, you're supposed to be a psychologist. Like, what is this? And yeah. Then, yeah, Kiss from Rose plays inexplicably, like, over. I think it's even the second song in the end credits. So you're like, what? Why is this song so disrespected from its author to the people who paid lots of money to put it in their movie? And like, it did, like, the video.
And
the,
everybody loves it.
Yeah. So the music video, like, which, it, you know, has, of course, lots and lots of scenes from the movie and also Seal standing next to the bat symbol, which works, I guess, because this was a fucking mega hit after this. 8 million sales, as
and
the man
says. He's like standing on a roof or something?
He's standing on a roof, yeah. Batman style. He's committed, you know.
And karaokeers the world over have been thrilled ever since.
Have you ever?
Oh, yeah.
You have?
Yeah, yeah.
With this?
Yeah, yeah. I actually sang it at karaoke last Friday. I haven't done karaoke in years, but that was on the top of my list.
And how'd it go? How'd it feel?
Really good. Really good. Especially because it was just me and like two other people in the room, so... Really good.
Incredible. Yeah. Well, that's my number one, and I think I know your number one, but...
I think you know my number one, and Zara Hederman, this is for you, because you said that you love this film, but you hate this bit. You disagree.
You're so stupid. If what you thought when you first began.
So that is Wise Up by Amy Mann from the film Magnolia, one of my favourites, directed by Paul Thomas Anderson. Just all those names together. I mean, come on. Unbelievable cast, including Tom Cruise, who is unbelievable in this film.
Who are singing in this clip as well, the montage.
Everyone sings in this clip. That's why Zara doesn't like it. I disagree because the first time I watched it, I was like, what the fuck? But then the film has all these like weird, surreal elements to it anyway, like the frogs and everything. Yeah, there's loads of bits to it that get really weird at the end. So it kind of makes sense. And also, tidbit, the characters from this film are all based on parts of the script are based on Amy Mann's lyrics. So Paul Thomas Anderson, obviously they're friends and he's a big fan of her music. And then he based some of the script and the characters are based on people from her songs and it's very much embedded in it. So I guess it kind of makes sense why they would do that. What do you think of them singing? This weird karaoke montage.
The scene I think is amazing. I think this is a masterpiece of a film. Mm. And my brother, huge Amy Mann fan, certainly back then, and loved this film as well. The soundtrack was constantly being played.
It's an amazing soundtrack.
In the house. Like, and it is, yeah. It's like, I love the soundtrack. I love this film so much. And weirdly, like, I would have had it on DVD and I would have watched it like a few times, even though it's like 3 hours long and it feels like a bit 6 hours long because it's just so fucking heavy.
Mm.
I went to see it in the Lighthouse there a few years ago. It could be like 4 or 5 years ago at this stage. They were just showing a 35 mil of it or something. And I was like, oh man, I can't wait to see this on the big screen. And I loved it. I thought it was amazing. But I think I turned to my friend at one stage and I was like, you know, I forgot just how depressing this is. Like, just how heavy, just how emotional and fucking... this film tears your soul out, like...
Yeah, I love a depressing film.
Me too, but this is so...
I'm just realising that after all my picks, I'm like, not one of those was happy.
Well, you can... the Eternal Sunshine one was kind of nice. But I mean, like, I get hope from this film in a weird way. It's Adam, our wonderful sonic architect, who's Michaelis over here, did say he hasn't seen the movie before. And for anyone who hasn't seen the film Magnolia, it's essentially like, well, it's like a collision course of all these very broadly drawn characters.
Every film that's done that thing where it's loads of these characters where their lives are intertwined, they're trying to do this film.
And they're all going through the fucking ringer as well.
Yeah, and the way people tie into each other and like there's one scene between one of the characters, like, is in there, they're literally pulling... bits of dialogue from Amy Mann's songs. That's why it makes so much sense that they would actually all sing it at the end. Tom Cruise, his performance is astounding.
He lost the Oscar to Michael Caine in The Cider House Rules.
No, robbed. And I can't believe that I'm saying that. But he was robbed.
It's crazy. I mean, like, that's one thing I know that Zara Hederman will agree with you on. I think she was kind of a bit of a career skeptic, possibly, or just hadn't seen that much of him.
Skeptic.
But then I believe she, like, watched, like, a bunch of films in space of a month a few years ago during the pandemic. And I know that she's like, what, like, this is, like, this performance is unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
it's unbelievable.
Really interesting to watch today because he basically plays this, like,
cult leader.
Yeah, or, like, men's rights activist, kind of. What's the pickup artist? Those, like, self-help pickup artist people that very much, like, he's Andrew Tate 20 or 30 years before Andrew Tate had existed.
Very misogynistic.
It's kind of interesting to watch because you're like, okay, these people did always exist. Sometimes the internet makes you feel like these people have just suddenly appeared out of nowhere and the world is going down the toilet. But actually, like, you know, this is, it has existed for a very long time. But really interesting to watch him, and he does these, his performance is incredible when he's talking about how to pretend to, that you are a kind and caring person. And he does this whole speech about how he is, pretends to women that he's kind and caring so that he can manipulate them. And then he's, you see other scenes where he's being interviewed by a woman who's trying to pick apart his character and trying to figure him out. She's done a lot of research. So you're going to see him coming undone in the film and how he ties into all the rest of the different characters. It's so, such a brilliant film. And the soundtrack is just Amy Mann.
Yeah.
Impeccable.
She's great. Like, underrated, if anything, I would say. And they are that bit in the interview when, like, you know, he begins to stop answering any questions, and she's like, he's just letting the time go down on the interview, and then she's like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "I'm quietly judging you."
Yeah,
it's fucking amazing.
But she's completely, all she has to do is, I mean, with any man like that, I guess all she has to do is just mention his mother.
Yes,
and he completely crumbles, falls apart.
Yeah, big time.
It's brilliant. Such a great film.
The late Philip Seymour Hoffman's amazing in it.
The cast is like Julianne Moore.
Yeah.
John C. Reilly.
Yeah. Melora Walters. She's phenomenal in this movie.
Incredible, incredible cast. Yeah. Incredible director. What a team.
But, like, it is one of those things. I know it's a cliche. I know people are like, oh, like, the soundtrack is a character itself. But in this, it, as you say, it literally is. It is all the characters.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, how many films can claim that, you know?
Yeah, that's why it's so cool that, like, that end bit is interesting. But it is the first time I saw the film. Because that's not the kind of thing I don't really like, that kind of surrealist stuff happening in films. I'm not really into musicals. So the first time I saw the film, I just felt really weird about the frogs and that, the singing at the end. But I've grown to love it because it makes sense for this film.
Yeah, and it's, what's that? It's magical realism or something. Mm. But, like, I do think it earns it. I can completely understand, though, why Zara, all the shout-outs for you, Zara. I can do it, or anybody would be like, you know what? No, that's way too fucking pretentious. That's way too much. You broke the immersion. I get it. I do get it completely. I just personally, I'm with you. I thought it was, like, the cherry on top.
It's,
I was like,
brave.
Wow.
They could have ended the film. It's just really sad, but it kind of shocks you or something a bit because it's so tragic, and then that bit kind of shocks you out of it. I don't know if the film would have sat with me as much if there wasn't that scene at the end.
Yeah, I think it's transcendent, yeah, for sure. And I do remember, an interview with Pete Anderson once where he was like,
oh, he's amazing.
Somebody said to him there that the interviewer said that they were like, they're like, oh, like, you know, there happens a general chit chat. And PTA mentioned that he was flicking through the channels the other night and he said, oh, Magnolia was on. He's like, sorry, like, I just watched the second half of it or whatever. And the guy was like, oh, what did you think? And he goes, I remember thinking it was really fucking long. And it is.
So great. It is really long. I happened to catch it. I was about 15 or 16, and my older sister Kira, who's 11 years older than me, so she was up really late watching it while she was working on college work, and it happened to come on the TV. It's one of those films that kind of comes on late at night randomly on TV, and I think it must have been on like RT2 or something, starting at like 11 p.m. and I couldn't sleep. And I remember I went downstairs and I ended up
with
just
ads
being
as well.
So I went on, I watched it, we ended up watching it till like 2 a.m. we were both wrecked, and she had seen it before, and I just kind of ended up just getting so hooked. And I remember watching the whole thing, and it was just, I was 15 and I had never seen a film like it before.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go back to it, having not done so now for the last 4 or 5 years, because I now want to. It is and that's your homework, Adam. You got to watch Magnolia.
And okay. We'll do a whole Magnolia podcast next.
Absolutely, yeah. Jesus Christ. 7 hours long.
Bring Zara in. We can debate this.
I would love to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Let's fight it out.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we can do that, I'm sure. In the meantime, thank you so much for this.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It was a delight.
I've greatly enjoyed doing this top five with you. Thank you. And of course, the album Endless Affair is out now.
It sure is.
Whelan's in Dublin on May the 5th and May the 6th.
Yes, please come.
And you're also touring elsewhere in the world, of course.
Yeah, going, starting in the UK. Yeah, starting in the UK next week or this week.
She's on all the socials.
I'm doing a few bits on Bob's. Yeah.
Go look her up. It's Alba Reddy, everybody. Hey. Thank you very much. Thank you once more to the wonderful Alva Reddy. Thank you for coming into the studio, to Adam's wonderful, wonderful sonic palace, and chatting to us about your top five movie needle drops. I thought it was a pretty spectacular selection, if I do say so myself, about Alva's top five. I think mine were pretty good as well, I hope, you know? I mean, like, the jury's out, you let me know. It's a tough one, like I said before, a very, very tough one. Not easy to just kind of nail it down to five. In fact, literally impossible to nail it down to five, but we tried our best. I mean, that's the thing about these kind of subjects, you know, you're very much... You know, you're very cognizant that you could do this a lot more, that you could do this one, you could return to this one again, but I wanted to kind of go with this one and just see how it came out and see how we got on, and I think it was a pretty good one. I hope it was. You can let me know. Feedback, you know. It's patreon.com/noencore. If you want to support the show, lots of ways to get in touch. At HandReadyDave on Twitter and Instagram. NoEncoreShow@gmail.com if you want to drop us an email. And yeah, got to go now and get ready for the next episode. I've got, like I said before, I got some good co-hosts kind of in the mix, kind of trying to nail this all down. It's definitely not stressful. It's a lot of fun. And yeah, we'll have a lot of fun on next week's episode. And yeah, I'll say no more for now. My name is Dave Hanratty. This has been No Encore. There will be no encore. Bye-bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.